You take the blue pill, the story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the Kakapo hole goes. Today, we're taking a deep dive into the Kakapo Matrix. But before we take the red pill, let's get an update from Dr. Andrew Digby on the threat of aspergillosis.
I'm walking back to the hut on Anchor Island on the morning of the 6th of April. It's a wet day, it's raining, it's pretty cold with a southerly wind. The track's very muddy and wet and slippery and steep. And I've just spent the night at Stella's nest, and I'm carrying with me, and you might hear the odd grumble from the bag, Stella A3, the oldest of her two chicks. Today we've decided to pull some more chicks off Anchor Island for screening for a CT scan for detect if they have aspergillosis. We got the good news, or relatively good news, a few days ago that the 6 chicks that we sent last week for CT scans, 5 of those tested negative. So they're coming back today and we'll put them back into nests tonight. And we're swapping them with these other 5 chicks, which will also get CT scanned. And hopefully if they're clear, then they can come back a week or so later. Also, unfortunately this morning, we are shutting down Tifidi's nest. That's a really hard decision to shut down a nest, but we have blood results from Tifidi and her chicks, which are all quite high. Tifidi's run comfortably high white blood cell count, so we think that she might be really quite sick, so we have to get her off the island. So we're flying her off, and her 2 foster chicks, Waikawa A1 and A2. We're also a bit concerned about Madama, who's spending, it seems, quite a lot of time on her nest at night. We caught her yesterday, got some blood from her, and a quick look shows that it seems to be okay. But yeah, we're worried there might be something else going on, so we're going to make a call today about whether to pull her off the island too. It's a really hard call to make, shutting down nests. It goes against everything that we want to do. We want to be as hands-off as possible. We want to leave Kakapo to do their own thing. We don't want Kakapo in hospital. But on the other hand, we can't afford to let significant numbers of Kakapo die either. So yeah, it's a really tough balancing act, especially when you're only have sort of partial information and it's a bit difficult with logistics when you're out on a remote offshore island. Anyway, I'm going to focus on carrying Stella back down to the hut. Probably only about another half an hour to go.
Thanks to the quick work of the Dunedin Wildlife Hospital, Tifidi, Marama and all the chicks were checked, cleared and returned to the islands only a few days later. Remarkably, Tifidi and her 2 large chicks took it all in their stride and she went back to feeding them straight away. No skin off a kakapo's nose. If kakapo noses had skin. Which they don't. Or noses. Which they also don't. The main takeaway is that despite all the fussing, flights and CT scans, Tifidi is so cool she's basically the Fonz. Hey. Currently, there are 10 birds in hospital. 2 adults, Takingi, who thought he knew Kung Fu, and Roha, both at Auckland Zoo. Then there are 8 chicks in Dunedin, 5 with aspergillosis, 2 with broken legs, and 1 that needed hand rearing. But astonishingly, all 57 chicks are still alive. That's tremendous, especially as we enter the next risky phase for the young birds, leaving the nest. For comparison, 34 fledged out of 47 hatched in 2016, and 72 fledged out of 84 hatched in 2019. Currently, 2022 is sitting on 57 out of 60, with the 3 losses happening at the point of hatching. Some people go their entire lives without hearing news that good, so it's goodbye egg count, so long chick count, and hello fledge count. Fledging, as defined in kakapo terms, is when the chicks roost outside the nest during the day for the first time. So far, we've had 8 of the little fledgers, including Marion A3, who fledged at just 61 days old, much younger than the usual average of 72 days. Marion A3 is basically that badass kid you knew at school, who went flatting while still going to class. It'll be interesting to see who the shut-ins turn out to be, complaining about rent prices and happy for mum to keep doing everything for them. The chicks are vulnerable as they start learning about the world around them. The mean streets of New Zealand's offshore islands can make or break a bird. So the rangers must continue to keep a close eye on them.
This is Ranger Brody on Anchor Island. We've had over 100 millimetres of rain today. During the day, we're out checking some of the newly fledged chicks just to make sure that they were okay. That was just their scheduled checks and to make sure that they haven't gotten themselves into any mischief. All were good, but some were a bit wet, as you can probably understand. And tonight we're out checking, doing regular checks of birds on nests. Those chicks are all good so far. And yeah, we're just going around and checking the last ones now. So we're off to Toi Titi's nest still, and then we'll head on back. It's about 8:30 at night at the moment. But yeah, none of those chicks are really venturing too far from the nest at the moment. And you could probably understand with all this rain that it's probably best for them to stay where they are. It's a pretty wet and muddy place on anchor. And yeah, even more so when you've had this much rain.
To help track the birds, microchips are implanted in the chicks at around 35 days of age, and a non-smart transmitter fitted around 60 days, usually long before they fledge, but Marion A3 gave the rangers a run for their money. Once the birds are fully grown, the non-smart transmitter will be swapped for a proper adult-sized smart transmitter. But the important thing is that the rangers be able to find and monitor the chicks in the interim, just in case the likes of Marion A3 gets her claws on a Nissan Skyline to do her laps in. Fledging pretty much signifies the halfway mark of these chicks' journey to officially being counted as part of the flock, which happens at 150 days of age. So to quote a wise old sage, whoa, we're halfway there. Whoa, living on a prayer. You can pretty much picture Marion A3 blasting that on the stereo while doing doughies in that skyline. And that's why he, or she, is our kakapo of the week. Now I'm pretty sure I promised you the kakapo matrix. The matrix is everywhere. It is all around us, even now, in this very room. Man, Morpheus would be a cool name for a kakapo. Maintaining genetic variation within the population is key to the species' survival, and some lineages and DNA are very rare indeed. The kakapo matrix is used to track and match the bird's genetics to provide more favourable genetic outcomes during the breeding season. To accomplish this, the entire kakapo genome has been mapped and every bird sequenced and added to the matrix. Remember, all I'm offering is the truth, nothing more. I think it's time I let the good doctor take over.
What we have done is we have worked with geneticists to produce a matrix of suitability between pairs of kakapo. It's called a mate suitability index score. And so those data are based on the huge genomic database that we have for kakapo. We have the genomes of every single kakapo that is alive and some dead kakapo too. So that score basically provides us the suitability of each pairing of kakapo from a genetic point of view. And it ranges on a scale of 1 to 7, with 1 being that pair is very beneficial to the population if they reproduce, and 7 is very detrimental. So at the start of each breeding season, we basically have a big matrix of all of the possible pairings of kakapo and the relevant mate suitability index score for all of those pairings. So we want lots of 1s and we don't want many 7s. And we use that score to assign a priority to each clutch of kakapo. So this is a score which is assigned to a clutch, and we assume that all of the eggs in that clutch are produced by the same mother and father. We then assign a ranking, a genetic ranking, to each clutch. It's either a level of gold, silver, bronze, or chalk. And that's primarily derived from the mate suitability index. If the mate suitability index is a 1 or 2, then that's a gold nest or gold clutch. If it's 3, that's a silver, 4 for bronze, and anything lower than 4 becomes a chalk nest. And we call it chalk because that reflects the name of the island Takakahu, or Chalky Island, which is our kind of experimental, more hands-off island. And so any chalk clutches or chalk nests, we are going to basically have a reduced management scheme. We use that mate suitability index score to assign that initial level, either gold, silver, bronze, or chalk. And then we tweak it slightly based on a few different other factors too. So for example, if there's a founding bird, so one of our original population with less than 4 offspring involved in that mating, that automatically becomes a gold clutch. If either of the mother or the father have some rare MHC alleles, so these are disease resistance genes which have been identified in Kakapo, then we subtract 1 from the mate suitability index score. So they actually end up going up a level. So we end up assigning a priority level of gold, silver, bronze, or chalk to each clutch. And that usually flows down into a nest because we often end up with 1 clutch in a nest. But if the clutches get split between nests, then the priority of a nest is normally whatever is highest in that nest. So if you've got 2 different eggs, if you say you've got a gold and a silver in there, that will become a gold nest. And then we use these priorities to dictate our management. This is something that we've introduced. We started it in 2016 to try to reduce the management effort for kakapo. This mainly dictates how often we visit the nests. So, for example, when the chicks are between 4 and 14 days old, we will visit a gold nest every night in certain cases if the chicks are light enough, every 2 nights for a silver nest, every 3 nights for a bronze, or every 4 nights for a chalk. But we tweak that too slightly. It depends on the weight of the chicks, how they're doing, what they're eating as well, whether the mothers are feeding them ripe rimu. If they're feeding ripe rimu, if the chicks are in good weight, then we visit those nests a bit less often. So it's a little bit complicated. There are some nuances, but the basic gist is that the genetic value of those chicks dictates how much attention and care that we give to them. So what does that look like in practice? Well, on Anchor this year, we had 1 gold nest. That was between Ra and Hokanui, which was a mate suitability index score of 1. We had 2 silvers, 16 bronze, and 2 chalk. Whereas on Fenuaho, we had 6 gold, 5 silver, 11 bronze, and no chalk. And we have a higher genetic value of nests on Fenuaho normally because there are more founder birds there. These are the original birds which were translocated from Rekiura back in the 1980s and 1990s, and some of those birds have not bred very often, if at all. So they end up getting quite a higher score, whereas on Anchor there's a younger cohort of birds who tend to score a little bit lower. It's very much a work in progress. We tend to tweak this every single year, but it's based on that same genetic value. That's how we try to differentiate between the chicks and the different nests, because we need to step back with kakapo. We need to do less and less intensive monitoring and management as time goes on, as the population grows. And this provides a really good quantitative way of achieving that.
And there you have it. Fate, it seems, is not without a sense of irony, or scientists messing with it. But the scientists can only show the kakapo the door. They're the ones who have to walk through it. What's really going to bake your noodle later on is, would you have known these were all Matrix quotes if I hadn't said anything? I promise to stop that now, but we'll be bringing you lots of key information in the coming weeks. There's the mystery surrounding the stowaways who've been left to their own devices on Takakahu, as well as how many girls and boys are running around, and who their dads are, how many birds will be added to the official flock, and all the breeding season awards. We'd like to thank Dr. Andrew Digby and the Kakapo Recovery Team, as well as anyone in a long leather jacket wearing sunglasses inside. This episode was written and recorded by Jez Brown and edited by Kate Harrison. Our music comes courtesy of Cricket Farm, and please do follow the Kakapo Recovery Team across social media and support New Zealand's conservation efforts where you can. See you again, bird lovers, and remember, there is no spoon. Mate wā.